how many crumbs in bread. But last but not least, baby, most of all, why do I mumble every time you call? Because you're strange to me, baby. Oh, you're good to my mama. Chillings and girls, how many rolls in a wheel where did eyeballs come from? But last but not least, baby, most of all, why do I mumble every time you call?
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Hundreds of union members are expected to turn out for a St. Louis rally today supporting nurses striking St. John's Medical Center. St. John's nurses on the picket lines in the strike against the medical center are fighting a battle over issues like patient care and staffing that many nurses nationwide are also dealing with. Julie Gunther of Nurses United in Kansas City joined the St. Louis nurses on the cold picket line.
We know that the situation for registered nurses across our state and country is really dire as far as staffing conditions and quality nurse retention, and we just wanted to come and show our solidarity and support to them. We know they're advocating for their patients, and that's what registered nurses are all about.
St. Louis's organized labor community is coming together in support of the striking nurses. Today's rally will include the Greater St. Louis Labor Council, St. Louis Building and Construction Trades, Missouri AFL-CIO, and Teamsters Joint Council 13.
We're out on the picket lines. It's really cold, but it seems to be extremely well organized. They've got several barrels with fires going in them. There's like six strike points all around the perimeter of the hospital, and the community's coming by and honking and waving, and we've got firefighters out here, Teamsters out here, Missouri State AFL-CIO Secretary Treasurer's out here.
5 months of tense negotiations between UFCW grocery workers in Northern California and three major grocery chains came to an end on Sunday. 19,000 union members had threatened to strike at Safeway, Albertsons, and Ralph's grocery stores if a new contract could not be reached by midnight Sunday. The new tentative agreement does not include employee-paid premiums for healthcare benefits or a two-tier wage and benefit structure, two items the union fought against successfully.
More than a million workers in southern India's fishing industry began a strike last week. The workers, who anchored more than 6,000 fishing vessels along the southern coast of the country, are demanding fuel subsidies and a ban on fishing by foreign firms. The fishers, represented by India's Fishing Boat Operators Association, blamed foreign companies for a substantial decline in their daily catch over the last 2 years. The association says that locals can't compete with the technology equipped on the foreign vessels, giving them an unfair advantage. India has also seen a decline in exports ever since the United States placed duties on shrimp imports. The U.S. was India's second largest shrimp buyer.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. American workers are increasingly obese. A study in the December Journal of Occupational and Environmental Medicine finds that 29% of workers in the U.S. are obese. Obesity can add the equivalent of 20 years in age in terms of increased cardiovascular risks and decreased productivity. It's a substantial 9% increase over a similar study done 10 years ago. Increases were also found in the rate of high cholesterol and diabetes. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
No, not the yacht.
Darling, wake up. You're having a nightmare.
Oh, it was terrible. Oh. I dreamed we lost our billions, and we were middle class.
There, there.
We were both working, and we could barely pay our bills. The children had to go to public schools. Oh. We had something called an HMO.
Oh, you poor thing.
It seems so real. We couldn't even afford my Botox.
Oh, sweetheart, go back to sleep. I'll write another campaign check tomorrow.
President George W. Bush, keeping alive the American dream. For some of us.
Easily paid for by billionairesforbush.com. One thing we learned from the recent unpleasantness, otherwise known as the presidential election, is that folks in the red states live lives centered around family values that are stronger and fundamentally more moral than the liberal lifestyles of those blue state people in, say, Massachusetts, right? The political pundits insist that this regional morality gap explains George W.'s red state victory and has altered American politics for the foreseeable future. Democrats, they say, are hopelessly out of touch with the deep family values practiced by born-again Christians in the South and Midwestern heartland. Interesting if true, but quick, name the state with the lowest divorce rate in the nation. It's the very state that Bush, the Pat Robertson-style political preachers, and others on the ultra-right constantly denounce as the absolute nadir of decadent liberalism, Massachusetts. Its divorce rate is barely half that of Georgia's home state of Texas, for example. Nor is Massachusetts some sort of statistical anomaly. The region with the lowest rate of family breakups in America is the Northeast, including such blue-blue states as New York, New Jersey, Maine, and lefty-crunchy Vermont. The highest rates are, in of all places, the Bible Belt, where you still see billboards piously proclaiming, "The family that prays together stays together." George Barna, a born-again Christian and the head of a research group that does surveys among faith groups, finds that only 19% of Northeasterners have divorced, compared to 27% of Southerners and Midwesterners. Barna's surveys also revealed another surprise. The divorce rate among conservative Christians is much higher than for other faith groups. 27% of born-again Christians have been divorced, as opposed to 24% of other Christians, and holy moly, only 21% of atheists and agnostics. This is Jim Hightower saying, maybe the pundits should just quit trying to color code America.
1 in 4 adults has high blood pressure. If you're one of them and you have a cold, Coricidin HBP has surprising news for you. The American Heart Association recognizes that decongestants found in many leading cold medicines can raise your blood pressure and interfere with blood pressure medication. So why risk it? Only decongestant-free Coricidin HBP provides a line of safe, powerful cold and flu medication specially formulated for people with high blood pressure. So make the safe choice. Coricidin HBP. Use as directed.
Your oldest has just turned driving age. Time to add them to your policy. So you get in your car, drive down to your insurance company. Hunt for a space, double park, get a parking ticket, get in a fight with the meter maid, get thrown in jail, meet a guy named Wally. Wait a minute. This is just a bad dream. You've got Geico. You don't have to drive anywhere. You can do all that car insurance stuff online. Oh, that was a close one.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. Online at geico.com.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And every time Rush Limbaugh hears that theme music, he ups his meds. Welcome, Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast on radio stations from California to West Virginia, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org. On this day in history, and normally I don't do these things, but there's a news hook to this and an interesting one. On this day in history, December 21st, 1988, Pan Am 747, blew up over Lockerbie, Scotland, killing 270 people. I'm assuming you have some recollection of that. Well, that flight, turned out the bomb was put on that thing at the behest of Muammar Gaddafi, the tin horn dictator of Libya. And the reason why there's an interesting hook here, let me just share with you a small bit. From the Associated Press, an article by Pete Yost. Just a mainstream story. This is not some liberal screed or whatever. The energy industry and some of its executives have contributed over $1 million to President Bush's inaugural fund, the committee handling the festivities reported Friday.
In all, 26 donors gave over $4.5 million. Occidental Petroleum Corporation, whose business stands to benefit from the president's actions in regard to Libya. Yes, that's Libya, blew up the airplane. Donated $250,000, as did ExxonMobil, the world's largest publicly traded oil company. ExxonMobil reported record third quarter profits. Record profits. Now, this is a company that's been around for a lot of years. Record profits. I wonder if that could have anything to do with an oil industry executive being vice president and an oil industry executive being vice president and the national security advisor having an oil tanker named after her. Isn't it? I believe I may well be wrong on this, but I don't think so. Call and let me know if I am. 1-866-889-8894, by the way, our telephone number. TomHartmann.com, the website, if you want to drop into our chat room. Live chat going on. It'll take you over to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. Anyhow, I believe that George W. Bush is the first president of the United States to have been a corporate, you know, a business school graduate and a captain of commerce, shall we say. Even though all of his companies, except for the sweetheart deal he had with the baseball team, all of his companies lost money terribly. But he was successful in getting the Bin Laden family to bail him out a couple of times. So, you know, I suppose you can't pick on him too much. Anyhow, Occidental Petroleum. In April, Bush took steps, back to the Associated Press, in April, Bush took steps to restore normal trade and investment ties with Libya, enabling four American oil companies, including Occidental, to resume commercial activities there after an 18-year absence. Well, they're very happy about that. And we're getting a lot more oil. They're getting a lot more profit. Everybody's profits going up in the oil industry. Bush's action was a reward to Muammar Gaddafi for eliminating his most destructive weapons programs. Well, sort of. He really, turns out, didn't have any. But anyway. Other donors from the energy sector included Texas oilman Boone Pickens, who gave $250,000. Former Enron president Richard Kinder. Former Enron president. Yes, he's now CEO of one of the largest energy transportation storage companies in the country. He gave $250,000. $250,000, by the way, is the cap. It's the most you can give. This is a self-imposed cap. The Bushies don't want to seem too excessive. Nuclear Energy Institute gave $100,000. Pikers. Southern Company gave $250,000. Inaugural committee spokeswoman Tracy Schmidt said the generosity of the donors makes it possible for many Americans to enjoy the inaugural events who would otherwise not have been able to afford it. Yes. Like Northrop Grumman Corporation, which kicked in $100,000 and will make it back certainly on contracts in Iraq. So, the presidential inauguration brought to you indirectly by Muammar Gaddafi. By the way, just a couple of housekeeping things. Our NLP class this week, I'm going to put it on hold for a week because it's the Christmas week. I know a lot of people are traveling. Just kind of a broad consensus that we should just pause it for a week. So we'll pick that back up next week, next Tuesday. And in fact, we have breaking news. And you're really going to want to listen to the second hour, the 1:30 segment when we normally do our NLP class here on Tuesdays. We're going to have on Lowell Finley. He's an attorney who specializes in election information. In fact, at the bottom of the hour, we're going to have a guest on who's going to tell you us all a good wrap up of what's going on nationally. Lowell is going to be talking about what's going on in New Mexico. And we're going to have a visit from Swami Vyandananda at the top of the next hour as well. But here's an ad that is running in the newspaper in New Mexico, the New Mexico newspaper, the main Santa Fe, the capital of the city, capital of the state newspaper. Well, I think I've had too much coffee here. Can't get a sentence out. Did your vote count, says the headline. And then the subhead says, what if the answer depends on where you live or the kind of machine you voted on? And then there's a series of bullet points. If you voted on an electronic voting machine on Election Day, was your ballot among the 1 in 20 where a vote for president wasn't recorded? 1 out of 20 people went to all the trouble of going to a polling place and standing in line for hours and hours and hours and didn't bother to vote for president, according to the electronic voting machines. Gee. If you live at this New Mexico now, if you live in San Miguel, Cibola, McKinley, Taos, or Mora County, were you among the nearly 1 in 11 voters on Election Day whose vote for president was not counted? 1 out of 11 in those counties. In predominantly Hispanic precincts statewide, 1 out of 16 ballots cast on Election Day did not have a vote for president counted. In predominantly Hispanic precincts in Bernalillo County, 1 out of every 11 ballots cast on Election Day did not record a vote for president. Does this sound to you like it sounds to me? Like, either these electronic voting machines are just really screwed up. Which, you know, kind of raises the question. If I can go to my ATM made by Diebold and punch in my PIN number and pull out $100 and it actually gives me $100 and it actually deducts it from my checking account, actually gives me a receipt, and it never screws up. I mean, to the best of my knowledge, in all the years I've been pulling money out of Diebold ATMs, it's never screwed up. But somehow when Diebold makes automatic voting machines, 1 out of every 11 people who vote doesn't, the vote for president doesn't get recorded. What's wrong with this picture? Well, there's people who want to know. Maybe there's nothing wrong with it. Maybe it's just a coincidence. Maybe it's an accident. Maybe 1 out of 11 people who showed up in Bernalillo County, New Mexico, decided after they got in the booth, I don't want to vote for president. I don't care. In Donna Anna County, 207 ballots were cast from overseas. No presidential vote was reported for any of them. Yeah, 207 people overseas decided, I'm going to go to all the trouble of sending in my absentee ballot. I don't care who's president. Yeah. Precincts in nearly half the counties in the state reported more presidential votes than people who voted. Say what? But in all these heavily Democratic counties, the Hispanic and Native American counties, and 1 out of 11, 1 out of 16 people, there was no vote for president cast. Over 2,000 of the votes recorded for president were phantom votes that were not associated with anyone's ballots. The slug at the bottom of the ad says, democracy begins at home. Recount New Mexico. New Mexico deserves to know. HelpAmericaRecount.org and AuditTheVote.org. We will be getting back to that at the bottom of the hour and at the bottom of the second hour with two guests who can illuminate us on this. But back to Mr. Bush and his activities, our activities. Now we find front page of today's New York Times, or at least their online edition, new FBI files describe abuse of Iraq inmates. See, the reason that we don't want to do this stuff is that we don't want it done to us. And somehow, because Bush has always, I believe, because he's always operated outside the rules. You know, when he got busted for criminal activity in his fraternity, he got out of it. When he got busted for cocaine, he got out of it. In fact, they even expunged his records. When he decided he didn't want to be in get drafted or go to Vietnam, he got out of that. He got into the Texas Air National Guard with a phone call from a friend of his father's. When he decided he didn't want to do that anymore, he got out of that 6 months early. He just told the National Guard, I'd kind of like to leave now and go to business school. Okay, fine, you can go. Try that, National Guardsmen and women in Iraq. And I think because he's never had to play by the rules, he thinks that there's not any reason to. Why should we play by the rules? We can get away with it. Well, the reason why you play by the rules is because you're promoting the rule of law. It's because ultimately you want other people to play by the rules, because if they don't, it may impact you. FBI memorandums portray abusive prisoners by American military personnel in Iraq that included detainees being beaten and choked and having lit cigarettes placed in their ears. According to newly released government documents, the documents released Monday in connection with a lawsuit accusing the government of being complicit in torture Also include accounts by the FBI, agents of the FBI, who said they had seen detainees in our concentration camp, our first concentration camp, Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, Camp X-Ray, being chained in uncomfortable positions for up to 24 hours and left to urinate and defecate on themselves. An agent wrote that in one case, a detainee who was nearly unconscious had pulled out much of his own hair during the night. This is incredible. And this is the FBI agents. This is a huge CYA action on the part of the FBI agents, because the Department of Defense guys, the guys working for Rumsfeld, were committing these crimes, these war crimes, these violations of Geneva Convention, and they were telling the detainees that they were FBI agents. And so when the real FBI agents found out about this, they wrote these memos going, hey, it wasn't us. I want this on the record. There's one on June 24th. Urgent report. This was to Mueller, to the head of the FBI. Described that such abuses included strangulation, beatings, placement of lit cigarettes into detainees' ear openings, and unauthorized interrogations. Yeah. On a couple of occasions, I entered interview rooms to find a detainee chained hand and foot in a fetal position on the floor with no chair, no food, no water. Most times they urinated or defecated on themselves and been left there for 24 hours, 18 to 24 hours or more. Amazing. You know, our country, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This year, give a Christmas gift of inner peace, mental health, and transformation in the form of a fun, beautiful game you play with your body and brain based on meditation, breathing, and biofeedback. Go to opednews.com to click on the Wild Divine banner to order the game that Yoga Journal says turns the quest for calm into entertainment. In most games, you find weapons. With Wild Divine, you connect your computer to your body and play the game with your mind, heart, and breath. So you find new abilities and awareness truly within yourself that you use to win the game and then apply in your real life. PC Magazine says Wild Divine is innovative and fun, and even better, it's very effective. And they give it 5 stars. It's shipped with both Windows and Mac software.
The Wild Divine game is a great Christmas gift that will make a real difference in a person's life. Go to opednews.com now and click on the Wild Divine banner to order it in time for Christmas. That's opednews.com. If you sell a product or service, we have listeners from coast to coast and in 97 countries who want to know about you. Reach out to our national audience with our small business advertising package. You'll pay just a fraction of what national advertising usually costs. Call now at 802-229-2288 or visit our website, tomhartman.com, and follow the links to the small business advertising package for more information. Don't miss reaching a national audience now. 802-229-2288. Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
I'm George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
The old Bible Belt bailey-hoo, you bamboozled them. Forget your AWOL and your DUI. You gave them a show that always pleases. Your friends claimed you were endorsed by Jesus. You razzle-dazzled them, razzle-dazzled them, razzle-dazzled them. And made sane people cry.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you 25 minutes after the hour. Thomas, as in Supreme Court Associate Justice Clarence Thomas, would allow the president to effectively waive due process rights. Last year's confrontation over detainees in the war on terror, 8 of the 9 justices rejected the Bush administration's sweeping claim that it could detain citizens, you and me, citizens, indefinitely as enemy combatants based merely on the executive branch's assertion of enemy combatant status. In other words, the president, the executive branch argued that if the president says somebody is this Ralph here, Tom, is an enemy combatant, I could be held forever without ever seeing a lawyer, without ever going into court, without ever having, no defense, nothing. Throw out the Constitution. This was so absurd that 8 out of the 9 Supreme Court justices said, this is so absurd. Who didn't? Clarence Thomas. Only Clarence Thomas supported the Bush administration's position. He claimed, quote, due process requires nothing more than a good faith executive determination, end quote. If George says it's true, it's true. In a recent case, now he's joined by Scalia when it comes to brutality. A recent case considered a Louisiana inmate. This information, by the way, from the Center for American Progress, considered a Louisiana inmate who was shackled and then punched and kicked by 2 prison guards while a supervisor looked on. The beating left the inmate with a swollen face, loosened teeth, and a cracked dental plate. The court, this lower court, ruled that the inmate's treatment violated the Eighth Amendment's prohibition of cruel and unusual punishment. I'm sorry, this is the Supreme Court ruled this. But Scalia and Thomas dissented, arguing the Eighth Amendment was not violated by the insignificant harm the inmate suffered. In another case last year, Scalia and Thomas dissented from a 6-3 decision to ban the Alabama practice of chaining prisoners to outdoor hitching posts and abandoning them for hours without water, food, or a chance to use the bathroom. Now, that's just fine, they said. Don't you get it? When we brutalize others, we brutalize ourselves. I mean, there is no them that we're getting. It's all us. I'm sorry. We're all in this together. We really are. Yes, of course, you penalize people and you put people in jail when they commit crimes and things. But when we become the brutalizers, how are we to tell the people in our society, don't be brutal? Here you have a memo from an FBI agent to his superior, to Mueller, to the head of the FBI, saying, if this detainee is ever released or his story made public in any way, Department of Defense interrogators will not be held accountable because these torture techniques were done by, quote, FBI, end quote, interrogators. The FBI will be left holding the bag before the public, end quote. This is a quote, and it wasn't the FBI who did the interrogation. This guy is freaked out because
Rumsfeld's guys committing torture, according to the FBI, were claiming that they were FBI agents. In one occasion, the air conditioning had been turned up so high that a chained detainee was shivering. On another occasion, the AC had been turned off, making the temperature in the unventilated room probably well over 100 degrees. I'm quoting from the memo. The detainee was almost unconscious on the floor with a pile of hair next to him. He apparently had been literally pulling his own hair out throughout the night. They went on to say that these threats, abuses, and torture did not produce any intelligence that could help thwart an attack. It was totally useless, and not only that, it would make it impossible to prosecute these people. What, are we doing it for fun? 29 minutes past the hour.
Mom, I can't believe you asked Rick all those questions. Where do you live, and who are your parents? It's so embarrassing.
Getting to know your kid's friends isn't easy, but if you don't, he's more likely to do drugs.
Geez, you have to know everything?
Actually, Sean, I do.
Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug-Free America.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Hundreds of union members are expected to turn out for a St. Louis rally today supporting nurses striking St. John's Medical Center. St. John's nurses on the picket lines in the strike against the medical center are fighting a battle over issues like patient care and staffing that many nurses nationwide are also dealing with. Julie Gunther of Nurses United in Kansas City joined the St. Louis nurses on the cold picket line.
We know that the situation for registered nurses across our state and country is really dire as far as staffing conditions and quality nurse retention, and we just wanted to come and show our solidarity and support to them. We know they're advocating for their patients, and that's what registered nurses are all about.
St. Louis's organized labor community is coming together in support of the striking nurses. Today's rally will include the Greater St. Louis Labor Council, St. Louis Building and Construction Trades, Missouri AFL-CIO, and Teamsters Joint Council 13.
We're out on the picket lines. It's really cold, but it seems to be extremely well organized. They've got several barrels with fires going in them. There's like six strike points all around the perimeter of the hospital, and the community's coming by and honking and waving, and we've got firefighters out here, Teamsters out here, Missouri State AFL-CIO Secretary Treasurer's out here.
5 months of tense negotiations between UFCW grocery workers in Northern California and three major grocery chains came to an end on Sunday. 19,000 union members had threatened to strike at Safeway, Albertsons, and Ralph's grocery stores if a new contract could not be reached by midnight Sunday. The new tentative agreement does not include employee-paid premiums for healthcare benefits or a two-tier wage and benefit structure, two items the union fought against successfully.
More than a million workers in southern India's fishing industry began a strike last week. The workers, who anchored more than 6,000 fishing vessels along the southern coast of the country, are demanding fuel subsidies and a ban on fishing by foreign firms. The fishers, represented by India's Fishing Boat Operators Association, blamed foreign companies for a substantial decline in their daily catch over the last 2 years. The association says that locals can't compete with the technology equipped on the foreign vessels, giving them an unfair advantage. India has also seen a decline in exports ever since the United States placed duties on shrimp imports. The U.S. was India's second largest shrimp buyer.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. American workers are increasingly obese. A study in the December Journal of Occupational and Environmental Medicine finds that 29% of workers in the U.S. are obese. Obesity can add the equivalent of 20 years in age in terms of increased cardiovascular risks and decreased productivity. It's a substantial 9% increase over a similar study done 10 years ago. Increases were also found in the rate of high cholesterol and diabetes. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Mm-hmm.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Where being progressive never felt so good. Hold on tight to the dream of democracy. Well, democracy requires a vote you can actually depend on. And we seem to have a small problem with that right now. Eleanor LeCain is president of Audit the Vote, a national network of community leaders, computer scientists, and election officials dedicated to ensuring that every vote is counted. Eleanor served as Assistant Secretary of State in Massachusetts and was a local election official in Boston. And I would add she's at the nexus of a national effort to figure out what the heck happened in 2004. Am I accurate in saying that, Eleanor?
Yes, you are. Thanks so much, Tom.
Glad to have you here on the program. AuditTheVote.org, by the way, is the website if you'd like to check it out. www.audittheVote, all run together, of course, .org. Eleanor, what are you hearing? Give us a summary, a national overview. What are the things that John Conyers is learning about? What are the things that you're learning? What are the things that you think are actually fairly solid?
Well, I think, Tom, what we're finding is that there are serious problems with this election all across the country, and the problems are a combination of voter suppression and problems with the machines that count the vote.
Yeah.
And when I mean voter suppression, that includes things like efforts to depress the turnout and having too few machines, especially in the democratically oriented areas, so that people end up waiting in line 3, 5, in some cases as long as 10 hours to vote. So there's, you know, a lot of problems in that area, and also problems with machines counting the vote, both the individual machines that people count on and then what they call the central tabulators, where the tallies from the whole county get counted. So
right.
We've got some serious issues in both those areas in counties all across the country. And right now, the epicenter of the problem is Ohio. And as you know, there's a recount demanded there by two of the presidential candidates, Cobb and Badnarik, and they're in the middle of a recount in Ohio now to see if they can track what exactly the problems were and what were the votes intended to be in Ohio. And what very few people know is that there's also a recount demand in New Mexico.
Right, we're
going to the same candidates.
Yeah, we're going to be getting into that in the second hour of the program. Actually, we're going to have Lowell Finley on, who's going to tell us about that. And I read the ad that's in the New Mexico paper at the opening of the hour, so our listeners are somewhat familiar with that. Let's talk about the problem of voter suppression. I remember in the week or weeks before the election, but particularly in the week before the election, news stories in the media about blatant efforts to suppress the vote. There were the people who were signing up folks who on college campuses and in predominantly Democratic cities or parts of town, where there were folks standing on the street corners with what they said were petitions to decriminalize medical marijuana, which is something that, you know, probably a Democrat would more likely be in favor of than a Republican. And they had people fill out this thing, and you couldn't see the top of it. It was covered by the clip on the clipboard. And it turned out that people were re-registering themselves or deregistering themselves or something. This was an official voter card that ended up getting submitted, changing the registration from Democrat to Republican or whatever, and didn't realize it. There was that. There was this corporation that was actually videotaped by a TV, local TV station in Las Vegas, and also photographed in Oregon, that apparently was operating in a number of states, that was paid for with money coming from the Republican National Committee and former Enron lobbyist Ed Gillespie's bunch, head of the RNC. And what they were doing was they were setting up little card tables outside shopping malls, outside federal buildings, outside state office buildings, in front of city halls, in swing states in particular around the United States, and saying, register to vote here. And we had numerous people who worked for this company who, in the week before the election, said that if somebody voted as a Republican, great, they took it, they kept it. If they registered as a Democrat, it got torn up and thrown away. So those people would have shown up at the polls, those Democrats, and said, "Hi, I'm here to vote." And of course, the pollsters would have said, "No, you're not," or "Here's a provisional ballot," and never would have gotten counted. There were those obvious efforts. I haven't heard a word about those things since the election. Mm-hmm. What has, where, it's like it's vanished off the radar screen of the media, not to mention the fact that it was widely reported on Election Day that people were standing in the rain in Ohio. Almost the entire state was raining all day on November 2nd. People were standing in the rain in Ohio for as much as 8, 10, 12, in one case, 15 hours, something like this. And there's essentially no outrage. I mean, it was presented as, oh, here's an interesting news story. What has happened to us?
No, you're exactly right, Tom, and that's why your radio show here is so incredibly important as a way that people can get some information about what the real deal here is. There's been an amazing lack of coverage in the media on this whole problem in this election. And, you know, I've talked to some of them, and they say, well, you know, if candidate Kerry had contested the election, it would be on the front page now of every paper in the country.
Right.
But this is not about any particular candidate. This is really about our democracy, and that we as citizens need to be sure that the sanctity of our vote is respected, and that when we cast a vote, that it's counted the way we cast it.
But there's some reality to that, Eleanor.
And that should not be dependent on any particular choice of any particular candidate.
Right, but there is some reality.
We need to stand up and demand the information about what is really happening with our votes when we cast our votes.
Yeah, I agree. Eleanor, there is some reality, though, to that charge that if Terry McAuliffe would say one sentence about this, about, you know, we would like to know what was going on with that corporation that was working for the Republicans that was throwing away Democratic ballots. We would like to see some criminal prosecutions. We'd like to see an investigation. We'd like to know what was going on. We would like to know why, you know, what was Ken Blackwell doing in Ohio? The Democratic Party has walked away from this, haven't they?
Well, largely, although I will say in Ohio at this point, both the Democratic Party and Kerry himself has gotten involved and is supporting the recount effort in Ohio. So I'm delighted to see that. And yes, they could make this, you know, obviously a much bigger story than it is. But still, I don't think we should let either the media or the citizens off the hook here. That
yeah.
This is up to us now to reclaim our democracy.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I just my sense of it is that this has to do in some part with the battle going on inside the Democratic Party about whether it's going to be Republican light with the DLC in charge or whether it's going to become the Progressive Party of Franklin Roosevelt again. And the DLC folks are very much don't rock the boat, don't make a stink. You know, we've got to cooperate with these people. And there's a whole bunch of folks in the Democratic Party who are scared to death that Rush Limbaugh is going to go on the air and start calling them, you know, sore losers, as happened to the governor of, what was it, Mississippi or Alabama? I think it was Alabama in 2002, where in the middle of the night after he had won, the Democratic governor, the voting machine error was discovered and 12,000 votes got moved over to the Republican side. And all of a sudden, he woke up the next morning, hadn't won, started complaining about it, talking about it in the press, going and this giant right-wing talk radio machine in that state kicked in. And all the news stories were about how he was a sore loser, not how the voting machines changed the vote with absolutely no paper trail.
It's really stunning. And then if you look at the fact that we've got now 80% of the votes in this recent election were counted by machines that were produced by two corporations, ES&S and Diebold, both companies run by very partisan, very pro-Republican businessmen. And I can just imagine if the situation were reversed and 80% of the votes had been counted by machines that were produced by Democrats and the Democratic candidate had won for president, I can only imagine what the Republican Party would have done about that.
Yeah.
So I think there needs to be a hue and cry about the privatization of our public voting system right now,
and how we
got the foxes watching the chicken coop.
Yeah, this is the ultimate felony against democracy. Of all the felonies represented by privatization, I mean, privatizing Social Security, it's going to harm people who want to retire. It's going to make billions of dollars for those on Wall Street. It's a good thing for George W. Bush because he'll get millions in campaign contributions from Wall Street, as he's been getting. I mean, this is kind of payoff in many ways. It's a crime against the United States, I would say, but I'm not sure it's a crime against democracy. It's just a crime against us. But the vote, to mess with the vote, to privatize the vote, that's a felony against democracy. And, well, anyhow, enough of the rant. Let's get back to the details. What specifically, in what states do you believe that you have either evidence or enough smoke that there's probably a fire there to say that there was clear vote fraud happening?
Well, I would say the most serious problems are in both Ohio and New Mexico, which are, and you'll be learning more about New Mexico with the wonderful attorney there is bringing the suit for the recount, Lowell Finley. So your listeners can get more on that. But there's a recent report out by the Scripps Howard News Service, just came out yesterday with a report of their nationwide study they've done over the course of the past year, looking to see about the state of our election system. And they have found some very widespread problems with counting the votes. For example, they had 10 counties they looked at where there were, you know, 1 in 10 voters, apparently no vote was registered for president. And in this hotly contested race, it's hard to imagine anyone going to the polls and not voting for some candidate for president. They have, in Pike County, Arkansas, a damaged optical scan machine lost 700 votes. In many, many counties, the vote tallies didn't match the number of ballots that were counted. That means, you know, they had more ballots counted or less ballots counted than the number of people who showed up.
Yeah, but Eleanor, I mean, we have machines and we have human beings, and neither one are infallible.
Right.
Even in the banking system, there are occasionally mistakes. To some extent, you know, 700 votes here, 2,000 votes. I know that there's that one county in Ohio where 2,000 or 3,000 votes went for Bush that, you know, it's a couldn't have been. But isn't the other side's response somewhat credible when they say, yeah, of course you're going to have mistakes, and there were some mistakes.
Yeah, well, I think anytime you have any kind of activity, there's going to be some kind of human error involved. The key is to check and make sure that you're getting as many of the votes counted accurately as you can. So I think what we're facing here is a mixture of some very deliberate efforts to suppress the vote. For example, in Ohio, where Secretary of State Blackwell was also the co-chair of the Bush-Cheney campaign in Ohio and did everything he could to suppress the Democratic vote. So you have that kind of a problem going on, and then that gets combined with human error and machine malfunctions, and it's hard to know with the machines, you know, how much of that is malfunction and how much of it was there any kind of programming in the machines that had them come out with a mistaken result.
Right.
And what we've found in the analysis on the New Mexico voting is a pattern that would indicate fraud in the New Mexico vote, that where you have the optical scans counting it, you'd run into a situation where the voting was flipped. Say it was an area where 70% Democrats registered, the vote would go, and 30% Republicans registered. The vote actually flipped. So the vote recorded was 70% Republican and 30% Democrat.
Yeah.
That's just, you know, if that happened in one place, that would be a very strange and unusual anomaly. But when you see that as a repeated pattern across counties that use the optical scan machines, you have to begin to wonder.
And these are not
right.
Eleanor LeCain, president of AuditTheVote.org. These are not Dixiecrat counties like we had in Florida. I wrote that piece for Common Dreams some time back, and you know, in the midst of that, discovered that we were saying, hey, you know, we've got 80% Democrats voted or registered, but it turned out that they'd been voting Republican ever since Reagan, essentially, in those counties. Was that the same thing in New Mexico?
No, apparently this was an unusual voting pattern, so
I
don't think they have too many Dixiecrats there. The other thing is it tended to be very heavily in counties with Hispanic and Native American voters, so there was a problem there. But I think the main thing is we need to get people to learn more about this, and I would encourage your listeners to contact the media who are not covering this story, particularly the New York Times, and say, we want to know what's happening with our voting system. We need to get under the hood and investigate and find out what the problems are and fix them so that every vote is counted as cast.
And people can do that by going to www.nytimes.com, the New York Times website, of course, and over on the left-hand side there's a Contact Us button or something close to it, and the emails of the various editors are there. Their phone number's there. You can call them. Why aren't you folks, I would ask them, you know, and I have, in fact, why aren't you folks more, you know, more thoroughly covering all the vote fraud? The thing, the if there's a smoking gun here, Eleanor, it seems to me, and again, maybe it's just that I'm just seeing half the picture, but I don't think so, because to do this program, we read both the right-wing and the left-wing websites, right? we
right.
read, you know, I read the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, and it seems that all these mistakes that are being found, we've got undervotes here, we've got overvotes here, we've got, you know, counties, all across the country that have to do with electronic voting machines. If it was machine error, or even if it was human error, half the time it would benefit Kerry and half the time it would benefit Bush. You would just expect that. I mean, you know, errors get randomly distributed. But I have yet to hear of any errors that have benefited Kerry. These all seem to be errors in Bush's on Bush's favor. How could that be?
Well, there are some benefiting Kerry, but you're absolutely right. It's the majority of the errors favored Bush. And I was down in Florida during the election helping with some legal protection on the voting there, and we were getting reports all day of people saying,
same thing.
Voting for Kerry, but it kept showing Bush. And
there you go. Eleanor LeCain, I'm sorry we've run out of time here, Eleanor. It's www.auditthevote.org. If you'd like more information, if you want to contact Eleanor LeCain, president of Audit the Vote, thanks so much for being with us, Eleanor.
My pleasure. Thanks, Tom.
10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir!
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist.com.
That's www.healin-holler.com.
A major power blackout sheds some light on problems with air pollution. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. In August 2003, 8 states and the province of Ontario lost electricity when power plants and electrical grids shut down. Researchers at the University of Maryland saw a unique opportunity in the midst of this blackout. It was a chance to find out how much air pollution originates at power plants. Laxon Marufu is an atmospheric chemist at the University of Maryland in College Park. He and his colleagues have been flying over Maryland for more than a decade to measure air quality. Marufu says the air is polluted by a lot of different compounds that come from a variety of sources. He says it's hard to determine how much pollution comes from each individual source, but the blackout suddenly provided an opportunity to study the effect of emissions from power plants.
By turning off power plants, while all other factors were kept fairly constant, it provided a unique opportunity to quantify directly and for the very first time the contribution of power plants to regional haze and ozone.
Just 24 hours after the blackout began, Marufu and his colleagues were in the air. They flew downwind of the blackout area and took air quality measurements. They compared their results with measurements taken before the blackout in the same locations. Marufu says they got a big surprise.
What was surprising was not the fact that we saw an improvement in air quality. We expected that. But what surprised us most was the magnitude. We did not expect it to be that big.
Marufu says emissions of sulfur dioxide dropped by as much as 90% and ozone dropped by about 50%. Marufu says that rapid change is encouraging. He says it shows that effective emission controls at power plants could improve air quality along the East Coast, and they could do it quickly. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
On the first day of Bushmas, my Supreme Court gave to me a duly selected presidency.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
On the first day of Bushmas, my Supreme Court gave to me a duly selected presidency. On the second day of Bushmas, my president gave to me $300. Remember? Instead of a democracy.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It's 5 minutes. Coming up on 4 minutes, 4.5 minutes before the hour. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. We've got the FBI trying to whip. Absolutely amazing. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, where liberals fiendishly plot for total world domination.
Million workers in southern India's fishing industry began a strike last week. The workers, who anchored more than 6,000 fishing vessels along the southern coast of the country, are demanding fuel subsidies and a ban on fishing by foreign firms. The fishers, represented by India's Fishing Boat Operators Association, blamed foreign companies for a substantial decline in their daily catch over the last 2 years. The association says that locals can't compete with the technology equipped on the foreign vessels, giving them an unfair advantage. India has also seen a decline in exports ever since the United States placed duties on shrimp imports. The U.S. was India's second largest shrimp buyer.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. American workers are increasingly obese. A study in the December Journal of Occupational and Environmental Medicine finds that 29% of workers in the U.S. are obese. Obesity can add the equivalent of 20 years in age in terms of increased cardiovascular risks and decreased productivity. It's a substantial 9% increase over a similar study done 10 years ago. Increases were also found in the rate of high cholesterol and diabetes. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
No, not the yacht.
Darling, wake up. You're having a nightmare.
Oh, it was terrible. Oh. I dreamed we lost our billions, and we were middle class.
There, there.
We were both working, and we could barely pay our bills. The children had to go to public schools. Oh. We had something called an HMO.
Oh, you poor thing.
It seems so real. We couldn't even afford my Botox.
Oh, sweetheart, go back to sleep. I'll write another campaign check tomorrow.
President George W. Bush, keeping alive the American dream. For some of us.
Easily paid for by billionairesforbush.com.
I'll write another campaign check tomorrow.
President George W. Bush, keeping alive the American dream. For some of us.
Easily paid for by billionairesforbush.com.
Hear about the quiet assault on poor people in America today on Hightower Radio. While the economic numbers for the vast majority of Americans continue to be bad, there is one little-noticed group that is showing remarkable growth. Poor people. In America, the richest country in the history of the world, the poverty rolls are rising dramatically and shamefully. The number of poor people is up by 4.8 million in the last 4 years. That's just the officially poor. There are another 39 million people who are now among the working poor. While technically not in poverty, their jobs pay so poorly that they can't make ends meet for the basics in life. Unfortunately, these folks are mostly out.
It wasn't the economy or the war in Iraq or even the war on terror. Exit polls tell us moral values are most important in choosing a president. No, it turns out that they were number four. And at that point, in the number four position, tied with unemployment and jobs. Where did this come from? Bill Plant. In the end, it wasn't on CBS, a White House correspondent. In the end, it wasn't the Iraq War, the economy, the two biggest issues most often mentioned in voters' biggest concern, as big as voters' biggest concerns, but moral values. It turns out that they weren't. What they're saying now about the new numbers, what are they saying now? About the new numbers that contradicted their earlier claims, asks David Brock's Media Matters for America. Not a thing. Not a thing! A Nexus search of all news sources from December 13 through December 19 for the words Gallup and values yielded only one relevant result. Ted Vaden, public editor of the Raleigh, North Carolina-based News and Observer, noted in a December 19th column, the most recent Gallup poll places the war in Iraq as the top public concern nationally, well ahead of values. It is simply not being reported. Amazing stuff. Absolutely amazing stuff. Anyhow, our guest today is political guru and uncommentator Swami Beyond Ananda. His website, wakeuplaughing.com. And Swami, I hear you have the latest shocking news on the steroid scandal. First Jason Giambi, then Barry Bonds, and now George Bush. Say it ain't so.
Well, you know, actually, I don't have to say it ain't so because the media's been saying it ain't so. Ever since Election Day, when the exit polls showed that John Kerry won in Ohio and Florida and the voting results didn't match, and the odds of a mismatch were pretty odd indeed.
odd, yes. 250 million to one is what there was this professor at the University of Pennsylvania. 250 million to one, he said, were the odds against this happening.
Now listen to this. An athlete pumps his body up artificially to enhance his performance, right?
Yeah.
Hits a few more home runs, and it's front page news.
Oh, it's huge.
Yeah. Meanwhile, a 250 million to one shot comes in and it doesn't even make the sports pages.
There you go. Are you saying that the president enhanced his performance illegally to obtain an election?
Well, I don't think the president himself is responsible. He just went along with his trainer. And as we know, Karl Rove has definitely been a practitioner of the ancient Chinese art of using energy, or qi, to take unfair advantage, and this is called cheating.
Cheating.
Cheating, yes.
Okay, Swami. Check out your crystal ball and tell us, how did they do this? How did this happen?
Well, if the president was going to get a strong election despite a weak record, something drastic had to be done. So shortly after 9/11, a new preparation called Code Red was rubbed into the body politic to release fear gnomes.
Fear gnomes, like G-N-O-M-E-S?
That's
like,
right. Little fear gnomes. So these little gnomes of fear that raise the adrenaline level and inhibit the ability to speak out.
Yeah.
Yes, but even that wasn't enough. So in Ohio, they applied something called Disinformula 2004,
okay,
which set off a rash of incidents to make blue areas redder. They released flyers telling people, vote on Wednesday. And, well, you can imagine how inflamed they were when they showed up a day late.
Yeah, I can see where that might cause redness.
Yeah, not to mention the blues.
Yeah.
Now, of course, there's also evidence that voting machines may have been treated illegally with something called CLEAR, an invisible and virtually undetectable program which causes hardware to go soft. And once again, the Democrats lose their election before the body politic is satisfied.
Did anyone actually see this being done, Swami?
Well, you know, funny you should mention that, because in Warren County, Ohio, there was a media lockdown where no one was actually allowed to see the vote counting,
yeah,
because of what they said were security concerns. Now, and that's understandable, because if I were practicing cheating, I'd be a little insecure myself.
Mm.
But the Ohio officials insisted that they were simply taking the right to a secret ballot one step further and making sure the entire process took place in secrecy. And I think what they call this is faith-based vote counting.
Yeah, but is there proof? I mean, and where's the big uproar? You know, the Democrats insisted that when it came to a recount, they said that they're going to stop at nothing. And this is before the election. What happened now?
Well, you know, and nothing is exactly where they stopped. And that's why we're calling upon the baseball commissioner to investigate this voting scandal.
The baseball commissioner?
Sure. It's only fair. Nobody else is doing it. And since Congress is sticking its nose into baseball, why not the other way around?
But Swami, baseball and elections are completely different things.
Absolutely. For example, in baseball, fans are allowed to watch the game.
Well, if what you're saying is true, just like those tainted sports records, this election may be followed by an asterisk, you know, a little asterisk.
Yes, I think you're right. There'll be a big asterisk. With the so-called mandate following the so-called election, many, many more young people will be asked to risk their necks to make the world safe for Halliburton.
Yeah, yeah, that's a tragedy. Swami Biyanananda, hey, thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thank you for doing what you're doing.
I appreciate it. And you have a new book out, don't you?
Yes, it's called Swami for President, A 7-Step Plan to Heal the Body Politic and Cure Electile Dysfunction.
And I'm assuming people can find that in all the normal outlets, bookstores, Amazon, whatnot, and also...
That's right. Normal and we do abnormal outlets.
like wakeuplaughing.com, right?
That's an abnormal outlet.
There you go. Okay, Swami, thanks so much for being with us today.
May the farce be with you.
Indeed, and you too. Swami Biyanananda from www.wakeuplaughing.com. Glossary of terms used by conservatives. This is the message board, the TomHartmann.com. You go to TomHartmann.com and we both have the live chat room, which you can drop into. In fact, I'm looking at it as I speak. And also, we have a message board where you can post messages, and you know they stick around, they last, So anyhow, here's Tim, one of our members, member 3328, has come up with a list of words that folks use, that cons use in the forum. Haters, he says. Anyone who questions the policies, actions, lies, etc. of Bush, neocons, Republicans, conservatives, or Christians. It used to be that one actually had to hate someone or thing to be a hater, like a member of the Ku Klux Klan, for instance. In the interest of streamlining discussion, conservatives now only require that you raise an issue in order to be a hater. Homophobics are exempt, but homosexuals are immediately anointed, he says. Here's another phrase that cons rather like. Why don't you leave the country? A typical question when the responder runs out of logical arguments. It comes from a denial of understanding that one can love their country and disagree with policies. Another one, what about? Insert Clinton administration member here. Or, of course, what about Bill Clinton? Or what about Hillary? Fair and balanced. Any news story, innuendo, or insult that A, supports Bush, B, slams the liberals, C, needs to be repeated ad nauseum to provide proof of a point, D, presents a right-wing perspective, or E, does not reflect the complete facts as known. Shut up! Used when a liberal visits a talk show and has an irrefutable point, normally comes after a period of the host or another guest talking over what the liberal's trying to say. Also heard, turn down his mic! Never to be used on a conservative guest. Anyhow, it goes on. He's some interesting stuff. Interesting stuff. And now we find the FCC apparently redefining profanity. Now, and obscenity. This is not so much of a concern, frankly, for me, because I don't think that I generally get into things that are offensive. But this this is from an email that was sent out to employees of one of the largest radio networks. I'm not going to identify it. And it was passed along. And we're trying to figure out exactly, you know, what the details are on this thing. The FCC has recently defined profanity in as many as six different ways. Number one, blasphemy. Number two, divine imprecation. I thought divine imprecation was prayer, but maybe I misunderstand. Personally reviling epithets that naturally tend to provoke violent resentment. Grossly offensive language that amounts to a nuisance, with a nuisance defined to be language that is prejudicial to a sense of decency or morals of citizens at large. Vulgar or coarse language, and words that are highly offensive, such as the F word, to be analyzed case by case by the FCC. These extremely broad definitions have only recently been adopted by the FCC and have not yet been the subject of clarification or court challenge, and the exact boundaries are impossible to determine. We'll keep you up to date on that. We're tracking this stuff down. I want to talk a little bit about economics. Economics, what are you talking about? Minimum wage. This, a story in today's paper that I thought was just really a vital one. Only one in four of the nation's 3,066 counties, 3,066 counties, 3,066, 3,066, in only four of them, not one in four, in only four of all the over 3,000 counties in the United States, can a person working full-time and earning the federal minimum wage afford to pay rent and utilities on a one-bedroom apartment? What is wrong with this picture? Roughly 80% of renter homes are located in nearly 1,000 counties in which a family must work more than 80 hours a week. That's two full-time jobs at minimum wage to afford a typical two-bedroom apartment. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. If you'd like to help bring the Tom Hartman program to a radio station in your area, please let us know. We have tools to help you make that happen. For more information, go to www.tomhartman.com and click on the Bring Tom Show to Your Town link on the left side of the page. Thanks for your help in bringing uncommon sense from the radical middle to your community.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor.
Palisex books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Viagra for your brain. It's the Tom Hartman program. No, I'm not going to go there. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service is on the line with our daily report from Washington, D.C. Ellen, Ed in California has called a couple of times here during this during the last hour. His cell phone keeps dropping. Can we bring him in and have him ask a question, and maybe you can help me answer it?
Go for it.
Okay. Hey, Ed, you're live with Ellen and me.
Oh, I just wanted to, first of all, wish you a happy winter solstice.
Well, thank you. Yes, today's the day, isn't it?
Let me be the first. And I was just wondering, it was kind of going on. There's a couple of things happening, you know, in this country that are going below under the radar. Mainly that the police are stepping up my sons have been stopped twice in the last 2 weeks for walking down the street.
Hmm.
And I know in Buena Park, California, they take drug sniffing dogs into motels, poor motels, sniff out the door handles, and then go to the motel, find the room that the car goes to.
Yeah.
And they say that, hey, it's your loud noise to get the reason for entering the room.
So, in other words, Ed, in your opinion, we're becoming more of a police state.
We're becoming very, very slowly a very good police state.
Yeah.
I mean, Ed, my boys are not hippies.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they've just been stopped twice in the last week and demanded that you have to tell them who you are, where you're going, what you're doing, why are you in this neighborhood. And they're not living in a bad neighborhood, Tom. San Juan, Mission Viejo.
Yeah, this is a problem, Ed. I agree with you. Thanks for the call. I appreciate you raising the issue. And in fact, I wrote an article about this very topic, which maybe that's what spurred his call. It's on commondreams.org today. It's a top story about the rise of fascism in the United States. But we can leave that for a little later on. Ellen, what's up in Washington? Speaking of fascism in the United States, not you, but Washington D.C. What's up in Washington?
Well, there's actually three things.
And what are your thoughts,
on.
Ellen? Ellen, what are your thoughts on what Ed just said?
He did not come through loudly enough for me to hear.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry.
Okay.
Can you paraphrase and I'll read?
Well, he just said that it seems to him that there's that police tactics that the country is sliding into a more of a police state.
I agree 100%. I mean, first of all, the White House, in my opinion, and this was going to go into my report today, this whole thing on the interrogation techniques. Actually, during the press conference yesterday, I emailed my brother and said, "Well, there are very few women here, so maybe I'll be lucky to call on me. You have any good questions about Guantanamo?" And the issue that I intended to ask about yesterday really got picked up today by the New York Times,
right,
which is this whole question about the interrogation techniques for the military, who ordered it, what kind of things constitute abuse, whether the president knew about it, knows about it, and supports it. Now, the White House today is saying that the president sets broad policy. He said that in terms of the detainee currently held in Guantanamo, they've been picked up on the battlefield, the same thing the president said. But he said that there is no that the president basically had not signed this order on interrogation techniques, which had been giving an executive order, which has been circulating around the internet. It said that the president did not sign that. My question is, what has he signed? What has he given okay to? What has Rumsfeld signed? And how come we don't know about it?
Right. And Gonzalez.
What?
And Gonzalez.
Gonzalez wrote the memo.
Yeah. I mean,
and that is basically what the Center for Constitutional Rights and some other groups are suing on.
Yeah.
And the information that came out about the FBI is because it has been court ordered, or else we would not know about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, those pesky trial lawyers, they just have a way of revealing things.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. That's why we have to get rid of trial lawyers.
There you go.
In terms of the attack on the base today, I mean, this is the worst attack. The missile hit right into the Mosul, cafeteria essentially, and they said that as we move forward in helping the Iraqi people build a free and democratic future, the enemies of freedom will seek to derail that transition. That is Scott McClellan's response to that this morning.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty unbelievable.
Well, it's tragic. It's really tragic that they lied us into this unnecessary war, and now our young men and women are friends and family. I mean, friends of mine are over there and you know, facing this stuff. Ellen, thanks so much for the report today.
Mañana.
Yeah, okay. We'll see you tomorrow. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service. And there she goes, 29 minutes past the hour.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Hundreds of union members are expected to turn out for a St. Louis rally today supporting nurses striking St. John's Medical Center. St. John's nurses on the picket lines in the strike against the medical center are fighting a battle over issues like patient care and staffing that many nurses nationwide are also dealing with. Julie Gunther of Nurses United in Kansas City joined the St. Louis nurses on the cold picket line.
We know that the situation for registered nurses across our state and country is really dire as far as staffing conditions and quality nurse retention, and we just wanted to come and show our solidarity and support to them. We know they're advocating for their patients, and that's what registered nurses are all about.
St. Louis's organized labor community is coming together in support of the striking nurses. Today's rally will include the Greater St. Louis Labor Council, St. Louis Building and Construction Trades, Missouri AFL-CIO, and Teamsters Joint Council 13.
We're out on the picket lines. It's really cold, but it seems to be extremely well organized. They've got several barrels with fires going in them. There's like six strike points all around the perimeter of the hospital, and the community's coming by and honking and waving, and we've got firefighters out here, Teamsters out here, Missouri State AFL-CIO Secretary Treasurer's out here.
5 months of tense negotiations between UFCW grocery workers in Northern California and three major grocery chains came to an end on Sunday. 19,000 union members had threatened to strike at Safeway, Albertsons, and Ralph's grocery stores if a new contract could not be reached by midnight Sunday. The new tentative agreement does not include employee-paid premiums for healthcare benefits or a two-tier wage and benefit structure, two items the union fought against successfully.
More than a million workers in southern India's fishing industry began a strike last week. The workers, who anchored more than 6,000 fishing vessels along the southern coast of the country, are demanding fuel subsidies and a ban on fishing by foreign firms. The fishers, represented by India's Fishing Boat Operators Association, blamed foreign companies for a substantial decline in their daily catch over the last 2 years. The association says that locals can't compete with the technology equipped on the foreign vessels, giving them an unfair advantage. India has also seen a decline in exports ever since the United States placed duties on shrimp imports. The U.S. was India's second largest shrimp buyer.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. American workers are increasingly obese. A study in the December Journal of Occupational and Environmental Medicine finds that 29% of workers in the U.S. are obese. Obesity can add the equivalent of 20 years in age in terms of increased cardiovascular risks and decreased productivity. It's a substantial 9% increase over a similar study done 10 years ago. Increases were also found in the rate of high cholesterol and diabetes. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
I love leaves in the wind.
pictures of my friends, birds of the world, and squirrels.
So do I. Welcome back. Happy first day of winter, the shortest day of the year, winter solstice. The day that in old Europe, in northern Europe, for probably centuries, everybody would start getting nervous. You know, it's, the days have been getting shorter and shorter. Now there's only a few hours of sunlight. In fact, way up north, like in Norway and Sweden, there might be a few minutes of sunlight. So the head shaman would get everybody all together, and they'd go find the tallest pine tree, because pine trees will burn in the winter. They'd find the tallest pine tree and the tallest hill, and they'd set that thing on fire, and he'd say, "Sun, reignite!" And the next day would be a little longer, and the next day after that a little longer, and the next day after that a little longer, and all the people would say, "He did it again." And he'd be assured of his position for another year. Speaking of people being assured of their positions, in this case for another 2 or 4 years, the election strangeness is going on here in the United States. We've been reporting on all day long on this program. We have with us Lowell Finley. Lowell is an attorney from California. He's an expert on electronic voting and vote counting issues. And Lowell, you just arrived in New Mexico, am I right?
Thank you.
Yeah. Hey, Lowell, welcome to the program. You just arrived in New Mexico, is that right?
Yes, I actually just got off the plane.
And why New Mexico? What's going on in New Mexico that took you there?
Well, this is my third trip back here. We've asked for a recount, and that is David Kopp, the Green presidential candidate, and Michael Bednarik, the Libertarian presidential candidate. They asked for that back on November 29th because New Mexico has a margin of less than 6,000 votes between Bush and Kerry, which was less than 1% of the ballots cast, and because there were lots and lots of serious irregularities reported on Election Day and detected afterwards.
Now,
this looked like a good place to come and recount and find out whether the count was in fact accurate and reliable.
Because presumably if somebody was going to do hanky-panky, New Mexico would be one of the states that they'd want to do it in, because it was one of those states that was going to break right close to 50-50.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And another factor is that New Mexico uses a variety of different kinds of voting machines, and that makes it almost a laboratory for doing a very close audit and seeing which ones had the most severe problems, whether they were just mistakes or whether there was something more malicious going on.
Yeah, so for instance, we have this ad from HelpAmericaRecount.org and AuditTheVote.org that ran in the Santa Fe newspaper today. If you live in San Miguel, Cibola, McKinley, Taos, or Mora County, were you among the nearly 1 in 11 voters on Election Day whose vote for president was not counted? 1 out of 11 people who went to the trouble of showing up at the polls, their vote, they didn't vote for president? What happened here?
Well, it's amazing when you talk to elections officials about this phenomenon that they call undervoting. They'll often say, well, this is just proof that our electronic voting systems worked, because this just shows that those people didn't have a selection. They didn't want to vote for anybody for president. But the fact is, whenever you've got more than 2% of the voters not voting on a top-of-the-ticket race like president, that's cause for investigation, and obviously 1 in 11 is way over 2%.
This is like 9%. I mean, 8.5%, 9%, that doesn't happen when people vote on paper. I mean, in the same state, it doesn't happen in other counties, right?
Exactly. The average rate of undervoting, that is people who cast a ballot but didn't appear to vote for president, if it was on an optical scan balloting system where the person filled out paper, the undervote rate there was down at about 0.5%.
0.5%.
So this is, 0.5%.
And in these counties, it was running 8-9%. San Miguel, Cibola, McKinley, Taos, or Mora County. Were these counties where they were using electronic voting machines that did not produce a paper trail?
Yes, that's right.
So how are we going to know if there's no paper trail?
Well, there, the lack of a paper trail is a really serious problem, and it's one of the solutions to being able to audit elections. But there are ways that you can, by getting at the interior of the voting machines and the central tabulating computers, you can do a lot of comparisons of the electronic records along the process and hopefully turn out discrepancies and points in the process where things look skewed.
But Lowell,
so you're asking... Go ahead.
Well, Lowell Finley with HelpAmericaRecount.org, in Ohio a week or so ago, there was an election official who provided a sworn affidavit to John Conyers saying that the companies that were supplying, that were controlling the tabulators, had actually come into her area and started taking apart the machine, swapping out hard drives and things. How can you audit it this late in the game? How do you know that this hasn't already happened?
We don't know. And we just have to have confidence in the many local elections officials that we have every indication are doing their very best to have a fair and accurate election here in New Mexico, and who, you know, take seriously their obligation to maintain the records in a pristine form so that there can be recounts and audits later.
Behaving with integrity.
We have every reason to believe that the vast majority of the local elections officials in New Mexico have done that and would not, you know, be permitting any tampering.
So
if there's tampering going on, it's most likely being done from points other than local county clerks.
Yeah, in other words, people are hacking in, or it's being done by the people supplying the software or controlling the machines?
Exactly.
Yeah. So we have, okay, across the state, 1 in 12 ballots in predominantly Native American precincts did not have a vote for president, so that's about, what, 7-8% also. Again, where people use paper, it was 0.5%. In predominantly Hispanic precincts in Bernalillo County, 1 out of every 11 ballots cast on Election Day did not record a vote for president. Over and over and over again, we see these things. In Dona Ana County, 207 votes were cast from overseas. Not a single presidential vote was reported on any of them. All these people took the trouble to send in their votes. This is all pretty damning stuff. I mean, this is pretty conspicuous. I'm assuming that Governor Richardson, who is a good and loyal Democrat, would be looking at this, well, actually, just widely considered, I think, to be a fairly decent man and politician, must be horrified, must be just jumping all over the place to get something done about this, to get to the bottom of this, is he?
Unfortunately, thus far, Governor Richardson has not been supportive of the recount effort. He has said early on and then again at the end of last week that he doesn't think a recount is needed, that he will not support it going forward unless the candidates who requested it put up $1.4 million in advance, which is a plainly illegal demand under New Mexico law.
Interesting. Although John...
Why this objection, we don't really know.
Yeah. Although John Kerry has that kind of money. I mean, it wouldn't it be nice if he were to come riding into town?
We would be delighted to receive a check.
Yeah, and let's ask somebody in New Mexico what they think about 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. We're talking with Lowell Finley. Lowell is an election attorney from California. He's an expert on electronic voting and vote counting issues. Just showed up in New Mexico, going to help trying to figure out what's going on there. Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico, is on the line. Hey, Roy, welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning, Tom, and good morning to your guests. Was it Lowell?
Yes. Yes, Morning.
It's all. The thing that I called about, and I probably missed a little bit because I was listening to it on the web, but Taos County and those northern counties are traditionally so massive Democratic. I mean, they used to steal the elections for the Democrats, and this is backwards from historical.
Yeah, so these are historically Democratic counties, and these are the places where the undervotes happened?
Massively. And... Richardson, you know, there again, he's a nice guy, but he's a politician. And he is that middle of the road. He's trying to position himself to get, you know, to kind of keep moving up the ranks and don't stir things, don't be a conspiracy guy, et cetera, et cetera.
You think he doesn't want to be seen as...
Yeah,
go ahead.
The one thing that I would ask Lowell to do is take the high road to Taos, if you're going up to Taos, the town, and take the high road and stop by the Santuario in Chimayo and get the healing. That's the Lords of America, if you will. And I'm not a real spiritual guy, but that Santuario, you can get some miracles.
This is that's that old church that was built 200-300 years ago that's got all the crutches
right.
on the walls. I've been in there.
Well, actually, the insurance companies made them clean it up. Now they've only got 10 or 12 of them up there.
Yeah, but, I was there a couple years ago. Interesting. Okay, so Lowell should, in other words, Lowell needs to protect himself.
If you need a miracle, Lowell, stop by the Santuario.
Okay.
And you guys have a good
okay.
one.
Okay, I haven't had time to get up there yet, but lots of people have told me I need to get to the northern part of the state.
Yeah,
I'm going to give it a try.
Yeah, Roy, thanks for the call and thanks for confirming, you know, the concerns that we have here. This is an issue. Lowell Finley, what brought you know, you're from California. You saw this problem. You're with this group called Help America Recount. How can people support the work that you're doing?
Well, as you can imagine, donations would be much appreciated. As I said, the state has put up an unreasonable and arbitrary demand for $1.4 million, but that may be the only way we can get this thing done, is to pay that in advance. Our group has already raised a lot of money and, in fact, put up the original deposit of more than $114,000 based on donations from ordinary people all over the United States.
That's great. And people can do that by going to helpamericarecount.org, I'm assuming.
That's right.
Okay, great. Let's hear.
You can educate yourself on the issue at that same website. Also, at another website, auditthevote.org.
Right. Okay. Let's hear from another.
If you're here in New Mexico, write letters and make calls to the governor and to the Secretary of State and tell them why you think a recount is warranted and why the people of New Mexico deserve it.
There you go. Speaking of here in New Mexico, let's go to another listener in New Mexico. Rachel in Santa Fe, New Mexico, is on the line. Hey, Rachel, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, Tom. It's Narlodius from the chat room.
Great.
You know, a lot of people from the Kerry campaign and the recount campaign are sort of seeing a side of Richardson that we didn't expect to see, and that is the politician who may have his sights on the 2008 election and doesn't really want to encourage any challenge to that possibility.
Do you think that's what it's about? He's looking at his future and he doesn't want to rock the boat. He doesn't want to be seen as a conspiracy nut or whatever.
Well, and to jeopardize his own foot in the door, possibly. I mean, that's the only thing. Among the people who are talking about it, it's the only thing that makes sense.
But, Rachel, it would make perfect sense if the vote had been stolen for the Democrats, that a Democratic governor would say, hey, let's not look into this. But if the vote was stolen for the Republicans, it seems to me that he'd want to know about it.
I have to tell you, Tom, it's a little bit confusing, and nobody really has a straight answer, but it's definitely something worth thinking about.
Yeah, Rachel.
And I can't give you an answer.
Rachel, are you and your friends calling the governor's office and demanding that he get involved in this thing?
A number of my friends are involved, and I'm doing also campaigning, but, you know, we just can't seem to make any headway. People are tired of elections, even as I contact people about it. Nobody wants to hear about it because they're so burned out.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let me encourage you to call your local radio stations, call your TV stations, write letters to the editor of all your local newspapers, and get out there and get active, maybe even stand on a street corner with a sign or something. Rachel, great to hear from you. Thanks for calling in. I do appreciate it. Lowell Finley, what can people do besides just going to helpamericarecount.org or auditthevote.org? What can people in New Mexico, our listeners in New Mexico, do?
We've had a tremendous outpouring of support from hundreds of people who volunteered to be observers when we get this recount going, and they've done trainings and have agreed to, at their own expense, to go out to all corners of the state. So we can always use additional support in that way.
Like bodies, people showing up and helping out, you mean? Volunteers.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay.
It's been difficult, though, because we, you know, have had to keep telling people it's been delayed from when it was expected to start. By law, this recount should have been started and finished by now. And the state canvassing board, which consists of Governor Richardson, the Secretary of State, and the state's Chief Justice, simply refused to act until their deadline had passed, and then have continued to drag their feet. I do want to say that to Governor Richardson's credit, he has been talking for some time about bringing a reform package before the legislature to clean up the state's election laws next year.
Yeah.
But I think it's very important to know exactly what the problems are, but before you start trying to write reform legislation.
Right. Now this is a case. Go ahead, Lowell. I'm sorry.
Well, we see such clear evidence of very serious problems that I think anyone in a position of responsibility in a government should want to see the full information.
Now this
only gonna get that.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. This is not, however, a state where if the vote, and it's only, you know, Bush only won by a few thousand votes, but if that was changed so that Kerry won, that's not going to change the national election.
No, it's not.
This is more about trying to find out what's going on out there, right? Looking at a trend. Here's a microcosm of the macrocosm.
That's right. And yeah. I think it's for that reason it's important to everyone in the nation, not just to people in New Mexico.
Yeah. We have to get this thing out. We've been talking to Lowell Finley. He's an election attorney from California. He's with HelpAmericaRecount.org. You can get more information. You can help their efforts, www.HelpAmericaRecount.org or AuditTheVote.org. Lowell, thanks so much for being with us today. Do appreciate
That's
it.
Right.
10 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This year, give a Christmas gift of inner peace, mental health, and transformation in the form of a fun, beautiful game you play with your body and brain based on meditation, breathing, and biofeedback. Go to opednews.com to click on the Wild Divine banner to order the game that Yoga Journal says turns the quest for calm into entertainment. In most games, you find weapons. With Wild Divine, you connect your computer to your body and play the game with your mind, heart, and breath. So you find new abilities and awareness truly within yourself that you use to win the game and then apply in your real life. PC Magazine says Wild Divine is innovative and fun, and even better, it's very effective. And they give it 5 stars. It's shipped with both Windows and Mac software.
The Wild Divine game is a great Christmas gift that will make a real difference in a person's life. Go to opednews.com now and click on the Wild Divine banner to order it in time for Christmas. That's opednews.com.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a Workers Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. According to the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, harassment of teenagers in the workplace is on the rise. The D.C. Radio Co-op's Selena Musuta reports.
When I was 17 years old, I worked at Steak and Shake in St. Louis, Missouri, and there I was subjected to unwanted
sexual harassment. I complain many, many times to my main manager.
Stories like Amanda Nichols, now a sophomore in college, where staff at the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, or EEOC, especially according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, there are 7 million people ages 16 to 19 that are in the labor force. This has led the EEOC to design a Youth at Work initiative to raise awareness among teenagers about their job rights. The EEOC, which turns 40 next summer, is a government agency that enforces federal laws prohibiting workplace discrimination on the basis of race, color, sex, religion, age, or disability. Since stories like Nichols are increasingly being reported to the EEOC, the EEOC has filed 40 lawsuits related to teen harassment since 2002. More than half of those lawsuits involve the service industry, says Naomi Earp, vice chair of the EEOC.
What we have is anecdotal data that indicates teens working in certain industries, including fast food, retail, and entertainment, are probably more likely to be discriminated against in some form of fashion, or of which harassment is one, than other teens working in an office, for example.
In the last 6 months, Jack in the Box, Blockbuster, and Heather's Hospitalities have been a few of the businesses that the EEOC has filed litigation against involving teenage employees. Amanda Nichols' case is still pending. For Workers Independent News Service, I am Selena Masuta of the DC Radio Co-op.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Christmas jams at the tunnel, shop to hustle or bustle. Snow and lights make Wonderland out this concrete jungle. There's miracles on 34th Street. On a train, get that lady with all them bags you see. Radio City for the Christmas show. We making angels in the snow, giving honey lots of kisses.
Quite a time of year to discover that roughly 80% of renter homes are located in nearly 1,000 counties in the United States. This out of We only have 3,000 counties, roughly, 3,066 counties in the entire United States. One-third of them, 1,000 counties. A family must work 80 hours a week at a minimum wage job in order to afford a typical two-bedroom apartment. To close that gap, now these statistics came from, this was in the Associated Press today. Probably in your local newspaper. It's papers all over the country. To close that gap, the Bureau of Labor Statistics has identified, and this, of course, being pointed out, the report's called Out of Reach Report from the Low Income Housing Coalition. To close that gap, says the coalition, the government must pour money into programs that help poor people pay rent and must preserve and build more affordable housing units. Now, I have to say, that's the traditional, quote, welfare, end quote, response to this. And, of course, the cons, the other side will say, well, no, you just have to, people need to work more, you know. So you have to work 80 hours a week in order to pay for the rent. Well, you work 80 hours a week. I mean, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. My response is in between the two. My response is, if the rules of the game of business are not working for all of us, sort of like the rules of the game of election, but that's, we've discussed that. The rules of the game of business are not working for all of us. Let's change the rules. Let's create a minimum wage that is a living wage. And let's institute tariffs on manufactured goods and on the performance of services, so that jobs that have left the United States can be brought back to the United States. You know, in the 50s, there was this boom of consumption following World War II. There was all this pent-up demand as a result of World War II. People wanted to buy things they couldn't. There was rationing coupons. You couldn't, you know, women couldn't buy nylons. It had to go to make parachutes. You couldn't buy gasoline. On and on it went. Demand exploded in the 1950s. And we made the majority of the things that we bought in the 1950s. Well, but demand is exploding again, but most of what we're buying is coming from overseas, and it's hollowing out the core of America. I'd say change the rules of the game. Raise the minimum wage, institute tariffs, and let's go back to making the stuff that we're buying and having and people having good jobs doing it. And then we solve this problem, and we don't have to do it in a welfare way. We do it by simply changing the rules of the game, in my humble opinion. I think it would work, don't you?
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Hundreds of union members are expected to turn out for a St. Louis rally today supporting nurses striking St. John's Medical Center. St. John's nurses on the picket lines in the strike against the medical center are fighting a battle over issues like patient care and staffing that many nurses nationwide are also dealing with. Julie Gunther of Nurses United in Kansas City joined the St. Louis nurses on the cold picket line.
We know that the situation for registered nurses across our state and country is really dire as far as staffing conditions and quality nurse retention, and we just wanted to come and show our solidarity and support to them. We know they're advocating for their patients, and that's what registered nurses are all about.
St. Louis's organized labor community is coming together in support of the striking nurses. Today's rally will include the Greater St. Louis Labor Council, St. Louis Building and Construction Trades, Missouri AFL-CIO, and Teamsters Joint Council 13.
We're out on the picket lines. It's really cold, but they've got, it seems to be extremely well organized. They've got several barrels with fires going in them. There's like six strike points all around the perimeter of the hospital, and the community's coming by and honking and waving, and we've got firefighters out here, Teamsters out here, Missouri State AFL-CIO Secretary Treasurer's out here.
5 months of tense negotiations between UFCW grocery workers in Northern California and three major grocery chains came to an end on Sunday. 19,000 union members had threatened to strike at Safeway, Albertsons, and Ralph's grocery stores if a new contract could not be reached by midnight Sunday. The new tentative agreement does not include employee-paid premiums for healthcare benefits or a two-tier wage and benefit structure, two items the union fought against successfully.
More than a million workers in southern India's fishing industry began a strike last week. The workers, who anchored more than 6,000 fishing vessels along the southern coast of the country, are demanding fuel subsidies and a ban on fishing by foreign firms. The fishers, represented by India's Fishing Boat Operators Association, blamed foreign companies for a substantial decline in their daily catch over the last 2 years. The association says that locals can't compete with the technology equipped on the foreign vessels, giving them an unfair advantage. India has also seen a decline in exports ever since the United States placed duties on shrimp imports. The U.S. was India's second largest shrimp buyer.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. American workers are increasingly obese. A study in the December Journal of Occupational and Environmental Medicine finds that 29% of workers in the U.S. are obese. Obesity can add the equivalent of 20 years in age in terms of increased cardiovascular risks and decreased productivity. It's a substantial 9% increase over a similar study done 10 years ago. Increases were also found in the rate of high cholesterol and diabetes. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
No,
not the yacht.
Darling, wake up. You're having a nightmare.
Oh, it was terrible. Oh. I dreamed we lost our billions, and we were middle class.
There, there.
We were both working, and we could barely pay our bills. The children had to go to public schools. Oh. We had something called an HMO.
Oh, you poor thing.
It seems so real. We couldn't even afford my Botox.
Oh, sweetheart, go back to sleep. I'll write another campaign check tomorrow.
President George W. Bush, keeping alive the American dream. For some of us.
Easily paid for by billionairesforbush.com.
One thing we learned from the recent unpleasantness, otherwise known as the presidential election, is that folks in the red states live lives centered around family values that are stronger and fundamentally more moral than the liberal lifestyles of those blue state people in, say, Massachusetts, right? The political pundits insist that this regional morality gap explains George W.'s red state victory and has altered American politics for the foreseeable future. Democrats, they say, are hopelessly out of touch with the deep family values practiced by born-again Christians in the South and Midwestern heartland. Interesting if true, but quick, name the state with the lowest divorce rate in the nation. It's the very state that Bush, the Pat Robertson-style political preachers, and others on the ultra-right constantly denounce as the absolute nadir of decadent liberalism. Massachusetts. Its divorce rate is barely half that of Georgia's home state of Texas, for example. Nor is Massachusetts some sort of statistical anomaly. The region with the lowest rate of family breakups in America is the Northeast, including such blue-blue states as New York, New Jersey, Maine, and lefty-crunchy Vermont. The highest rates are, in of all places, the Bible Belt, where you still see billboards piously proclaiming, "The family that prays together stays together." George Barna, a born-again Christian and the head of a research group that does surveys among faith groups, finds that only 19% of Northeasterners have divorced, compared to 27% of Southerners and Midwesterners. Barna's surveys also revealed another surprise. The divorce rate among conservative Christians is much higher than for other faith groups. 27% of born-again Christians have been divorced, as opposed to 24% of other Christians, and, holy moly, only 21% of atheists and agnostics. This is Jim Hightower saying, maybe the pundits should just quit trying to color-code America.
One in four adults has high blood pressure. If you're one of them and you have a cold, Coricidin HBP has surprising news for you. The American Heart Association recognizes that decongestants found in many leading cold medicines can raise your blood pressure and interfere with blood pressure medication. So why risk it? Only decongestant-free Coricidin HBP provides a line of safe, powerful cold and flu medication specially formulated for people with high blood pressure. So make the safe choice. Coricidin HBP. Use as directed.
Your oldest has just turned driving age. Time to add him to your policy. So you get in your car, drive down to your insurance company. Hunt for a space, double park, get a parking ticket, get in a fight with the meter maid, get thrown in jail, meet a guy named Wally. Wait a minute. This is just a bad dream. You've got Geico. You don't have to drive anywhere. You can do all that car insurance stuff online. Oh, that was a close one.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. Online at geico.com.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, tomhartman.com, the website. If you want to drop into the chat room, say hello, visit the message board. Click Articles on Democracy, get you over to the articles that I write for Common Dreams and other websites. Woke up this morning 28 below zero in Callis, the city up the road from us. About 20 below zero here in central Vermont. And this story in the Washington Post, this is the way a wood frog freezes. First, they've just discovered this. They thought that these frogs dug down to the bottom of the pond and just hung out where it didn't freeze. No, they actually freeze. First, as the temperature drops below 32 degrees, ice crystals start to form just beneath the frog's skin. I know how the frog felt. The normally pliant and slimy amphibian becomes, for lack of a better word, slushy. Then, if the mercury continues to fall, ice races inward through the frog's arteries and veins. Its heart and brain stop working. Yeah, I suppose I still know how he feels. And his eyes freeze into a ghostly white. Kent Story of Carleton University in Ottawa, Ontario says, imagine an ice cube painted green and you got a wood frog in the winter. Frog is solid to the touch and makes a thud when dropped, but it's not dead. When a thaw comes, the frog is able to melt back into its normal state over a period of several hours, restart its heart, and hop away. Amazing. So they're trying to figure out, you know, how does this work? And the neat thing about this is that the research that may come out of this may help them freeze organs so that they can be used for transplants and make it more functional, make it easier, more convenient. I'm not sure what the right word would be. There's probably a medical term for it. To match donors with transplanted organs where you don't have to worry about, we've got to get this to this person within a certain number of hours or, you know, it doesn't work anymore or anything like that. And so it's interesting. And also, I think, you know, it's been a while since we've had a caught you doing something right alert. It's always better to catch people doing things right than catching them doing things wrong. Here we are. So far, not a single person has been helped by embryonic human stem cells, but in cramped university labs, a young neurobiologist with movie star good looks, a Carl Sagan-like fondness for the popular media, and an entrepreneur's nose for profits is getting tantalizingly close. Hans Kierstead. We caught you doing something right. Hans is in Irvine, California. He's making paralyzed rats walk again by injecting them with healthy brain cells sussed from a reddish soup of human embryonic stem cells he and his colleagues have created. Kierstead hopes to apply his therapy to humans by 2006. If his ambitious timetable keeps to schedule, writes the Associated Press, Kierstead's work will be the first human embryonic stem cell treatment given to humans. It's remarkable. Kierstead, 37 years old, working a researcher at the University of Irvine, or the University of California, Irvine. And he may well have achieved a significant breakthrough. Speaking of breakthroughs, George W. Bush yesterday was asked, what are you going to do about the deficit? What are you going to do about the deficit? And he said, we're going to cut it in half. It was an issue on the front page of today's Wall Street Journal, article by Jackie Calms. The headline is, Bush vows to halve deficit. Halve. How do you pronounce that right? Half. It's H-A-L-V-E. Half deficit. Targets already feel squeezed. And then the subhead, two fascinating subheads for the front page of the Wall Street Journal. Less budget funding for aid, education, cities, science, bracing for the boomers, and Republican governors resist. In his first term, President Bush's domestic policy focused on creating winners, notes Jackie Calms. Prescription drugs, large farm subsidies, tax cuts, big homeland security contracts. He was the sugar daddy. He was passing out money to everybody. Where was he getting all that money from? Well, he was borrowing it from my children. You know, I may live long enough to have to pay it back as well. We're spending $168 billion this year in interest payments on the deficit that Reagan ran up. $168 billion, yeah, sure enough. And so, you know, 20 years from now, 10 years from now, 15, 20 years from now, how many billions will people have to pay, will the citizens have to pay? Now, Reagan only took the deficit from, what, $900 million, up to around $2.5, maybe $3 trillion. I'd have to go back and look at the exact numbers. But he was the first president to take us over $1 trillion and kicked it up to a couple of trillion. It went up a little more under Bush Sr., started coming down under Clinton, actually. Finally. Everybody wants to take credit for that. The Republicans say it's because they ran Congress. Now, I'm serious. You listen to these right-wing talk show hosts. Oh, yeah, we had good economic times under Clinton because the Republicans ran Congress. The Republicans are still running Congress. And it ain't happening anymore. Well, ignore that man behind the curtain. So anyhow, George W. was the sugar daddy for the first term in office, and certainly it had to help get reelected. Right. Had to help. Second term, well, as the Wall Street Journal writes, Jackie Collins here in the Wall Street Journal, get ready for a second Bush term about identifying losers. First 4 years, the winners. Second 4 years, the losers. You know, when the dollar was dropping through the floor during the Nixon administration, he took a whole bunch of different steps to try and stabilize the dollar. They were running around the world talking to other countries, trying to get them to participate. They were using tariffs. They were cranking up interest rates. They were doing all sorts of stuff that they had to do to try and stabilize the dollar as a result of LBJ and Nixon, both of them, Democrats and Republicans, getting us into a war that they didn't want to pay for out of current dollars. So they borrowed billions, hundreds of billions of dollars for the war in Vietnam. Certainly in today's dollars, probably close to a trillion. I mean, who knows? It had to be in that neighborhood at least. I don't have the instant calculator here in front of me, but it was hundreds of billions of dollars, borrowed this, and Nixon had to do something. And he did. And averted a disaster. And then when Reagan went on his borrowing binge in his first 4 years, just like Bush did, this is something Republicans seem to be inclined to do. Borrow and spend. Borrow, 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 spend, spend, spend. And it's funny, they always make fun of Democrats as
those tax and spend Democrats, those tax and spend liberals.
Well, if you're going to spend, you do have to tax. And if the people keep electing you, it means they're willing to pay those taxes.
Well, people haven't been reelecting them.
Well, okay, then maybe people don't want to pay the taxes. But maybe they don't want the spending either. But if they do want the spending, then and you're not going to give them the taxes, but you're going to borrow from their children. Isn't that a little dishonest?
Well, don't look at that man behind the curtain.
Yeah. Judd Gregg, Senator Judd Gregg, Republican from New Hampshire. He's coming out. He says, this cannot afford to be a guns and butter term. You got to cut the butter. You can't have both a war. There's been a 50% increase in military spending since George Bush took office. You can't have that and have Social Security and Medicare and low-income housing support and help for poor people who can't afford their heating bills. You can't have a strong agency that is overseeing and policing business in the United States, Security and Exchange Commission. You can't have the government protecting people who are being taken advantage of by credit card companies or scamsters. You can't have vigorous enforcement of the environmental laws. Just don't have the budget for it. Sorry. In fact, as the Wall Street Journal notes today, Medicaid, subsidies to Amtrak, agricultural research, and even some federal education programs, they're on the list. Visible areas of domestic spending that just might not make it through. In the just finished, here's a quote from Jackie Combs. In the just finished fiscal 2005 budget, which came in 10 weeks late, why would that be? Oh, that's right, the election. We didn't want voters to know what we're going to do. So it came in 10 weeks late. In the just finished fiscal 2005 budget, which came in 10 weeks late, big cities received less federal aid to comply with anti-pollution laws and job training requirements. Now, these are called mandates, anti-pollution laws and job training requirements. This is where the federal government says to a state or a city, you must do this. You must protect your citizens from pollution. You must provide retraining for people whose jobs have been shipped to India and China as a result of Bush economic policies. So let's say conservative economic policies, because there's Democrats in there as well. I mean, it was Clinton who signed GATT and NAFTA. So the federal government says, you must provide these services, but we're not going to pay for it anymore. We're just going to tell you got to do it. These are referred to somewhat euphemistically, and actually, I suppose, quite accurately, as unfunded mandates. Well, a lot of these mandates were funded when they first started out. In fact, almost always they're funded when they first started out. But now they're unfunded. National Science Foundation. This is National Science Foundation, the organization that is responsible for the core research. I mean, the stuff that tomorrow morning won't be turned into a product that will make a profit, but might someday lead to a cure for cancer, or, you know, stem cell research or particle physics stuff that's going to help us come up with new sources of energy. But it's, there's not an immediate financial value to it. So industry isn't doing it. So we collectively have decided, let's fund this stuff. And good things have come out of this over the years. Some extraordinary developments. Well, we're going to cut that as well. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Brian in New Jersey. Thoughts on the issue. Hey, Brian, weigh in on the topic of the day here.
I read your commondreams.org article today.
Ah, yes.
And it really is about incrementalism, just, you know, bringing things in shorter and shorter, smaller and smaller bursts, and we don't notice it.
Yeah.
But I think one thing that I've seen more and more, and people are getting complacent to it, are they're using the word terrorist for almost anything anymore. You see people terrorizing us because they're driving out of control, or terrorizing us because they're committing acts of vandalism, when these are other crimes that they're committing, but they're labeling them as terrorism.
And you know that the Patriot Act has been updated. I don't recall which bill it was, but it was in the last year, to redefine terrorism as an act to include an act against economic activity in the United States.
Yeah, and so under Section 803, anyone committing any federal, state, local law that violates or endangers human life is a terrorist, which that includes reckless driving or anything.
Yep. And if you're a terrorist, George W. says, you don't have protections under the Constitution. They can lock you up. You've got to prove you're innocent. They don't have to prove you're guilty.
Gary. Well, thank you, Tom.
Thanks, Brian, for the call. Good to hear from you. It's grim times in America. We'll make it through, though. 20 minutes after the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This year, give a Christmas gift of inner peace, mental health, and transformation in the form of a fun, beautiful game you play with your body and brain based on meditation, breathing, and biofeedback. Go to opednews.com to click on the Wild Divine banner to order the game that Yoga Journal says turns the quest for calm into entertainment. In most games, you find weapons. With Wild Divine, you connect your computer to your body and play the game with your mind, heart, and breath. So you find new abilities and awareness truly within yourself that you use to win the game and then apply in your real life. PC Magazine says Wild Divine is innovative and fun, and even better, it's very effective. And they give it 5 stars. It's shipped with both Windows and Mac software.
The Wild Divine game is a great Christmas gift that will make a real difference in a person's life. Go to opednews.com now and click on the Wild Divine banner to order it in time for Christmas. That's opednews.com. If you sell a product or service, we have listeners from coast to coast and in 97 countries who want to know about you. Reach out to our national audience with our small business advertising package. You'll pay just a fraction of what national advertising usually costs. Call now at 802-229-2288 or visit our website, tomhartman.com, and follow the links to the small business advertising package for more information. Don't miss reaching a national audience now. 802-229-2288. Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
If you want it, here it is. Come and get it. Make your mind up.
Unless that is, you want it from the federal government. Fights over what gets cut, notes the Wall Street Journal, and how much will likely become a defining feature of Mr. Bush's second term. The president pledged to half the budget deficit. And what's he going to do? Is he going to cut Social Security? He says it's also off limits for now. Unemployment compensation? Farm subsidies? They can't cut interest on the nation's borrowing, $168 billion in annual payments, much of it to overseas holders of Treasury bonds. Represents just 7% of federal spending. That's still a chunk. 7% of federal spending is interest on the debt that Reagan ran up. And much of it that Reagan ran up. That's more than the government. Here's the, just to put this in perspective, the amount of money that we spend just paying interest on our debt, most of which was run up by Ronald Reagan. Well, actually, you can't say that anymore. Most of which was run up by Reagan and Bush. W. The interest, just the interest payments on the debt, are more than the federal government spends on education, housing, transportation. Keep in mind, transportation, we're talking everything from Amtrak to the air traffic control system, transportation, science, space, and technology combined. Combined! 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Gene in Hillsboro, Oregon, on the line. Hey, Gene, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. A little aside here. I was rolling around the web, and I saw this Vermont anti-Iraq war resolution going around to bring the Vermont's National Guard home.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so you've already heard that then?
Yeah, in fact, I think I talked about it on the air a couple days ago. I know it was in my stack of stuff to get to.
Okay, well, I just saw that and I thought, oh my, I better send that to him. But if you've already got it, I'm
he
sorry.
Would know about that. No, it's actually fascinating because actually I think it was in my stack from yesterday and maybe I didn't get to it. But what's happened is that there are a bunch of towns here, and because here I mean I live in the state capital. It's 9,000 people, 8,900 people. I mean, most of Vermont, Burlington is over there, you know, the biggest city in the state. I think it's the biggest city in the state. And they, you know, 50, 60,000 people, something like that, maybe 100,000 in the total metro area. But the whole state only has 600,000 people in it. So the average town is quite small. And when somebody gets shipped off to the National Guard, I mean, we just had a thing here a couple of weeks ago where like 500, 600 people went off to the National Guard. Everybody knew somebody. It was somebody's neighbor. And
yeah.
And as a result of that, you've got people saying, enough already. I mean, we had, last year in the state of Vermont, we had one murder. We had one person die as a result of violence. And we had seven people die in Iraq. And the folks in Vermont are looking at each other going, there's something wrong with this picture. And, you know, and then today we have this horrific thing that just happened in Mosul. Where we still don't know yet what caused it, so I don't want to get into a whole high-horsed rant about it, but it's just, you know, we shouldn't be there in the first place.
No, and boy, if the Red Cedars only knew about this kind of stuff. Anyway, I'll let you be.
Okay, thanks a lot, Gene. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. I do appreciate it, and thank you for listening. So what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Are we going to cut back on the war in Iraq? That's $200 billion. Doesn't look like it. And where's the money going to come from? Pell Grants, main source of federal funding for disadvantaged college students. These have been frozen for 3 years in a row at $4,050. And during that same period of time, notes the Wall Street Journal, the cost of tuition at four-year public colleges has risen 28%. Not only that, about 1 million additional kids have qualified for these things because so many more people in America are becoming poor that the average Pell Grant has declined. The average amount that's being passed out. They're not going to cut that, are they? I mean, they already are. They have been by default. Or funds for heating assistance to low-income households. Again, the Wall Street Journal notes it's not enough to match the spike in energy costs. The final tally of almost $2.2 billion is $164 million below what's needed, according to the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities. What are we going to do? 29 minutes past the hour.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed. Please hang up.
Having a hard time connecting with someone who cares? Try the Boys Town National Hotline at 1-800-448-3000. They'll be there to help you when you need it the most, 24 hours a day. They'll even pay for the call. Simply call 1-800-448-3000.
Boys Town National Hotline. How can I help?
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Hundreds of union members are expected to turn out for a St. Louis rally today supporting nurses striking St. John's Medical Center. St. John's nurses on the picket lines in the strike against the medical center are fighting a battle over issues like patient care and staffing that many nurses nationwide are also dealing with. Julie Gunther of Nurses United in Kansas City joined the St. Louis nurses on the cold picket line.
We know that the situation for registered nurses across our state and country is really dire as far as staffing conditions and quality nurse retention, and we just wanted to come and show our solidarity and support for them. We know they're advocating for their patients, and that's what registered nurses are all about.
St. Louis's organized labor community is coming together in support of the striking nurses. Today's rally will include the Greater St. Louis Labor Council, St. Louis Building and Construction Trades, Missouri AFL-CIO, and Teamsters Joint Council 13.
We're out on the picket lines. It's really cold, but it seems to be extremely well organized. They've got several barrels with fires going in them. There's like six strike points all around the perimeter of the hospital, and the community's coming by and honking and waving, and we've got firefighters out here, Teamsters out here, Missouri State AFL-CIO Secretary Treasurer's out here.
5 months of tense negotiations between UFCW grocery workers in Northern California and three major grocery chains came to an end on Sunday. 19,000 union members had threatened to strike at Safeway, Albertsons, and Ralph's grocery stores if a new contract could not be reached by midnight Sunday. The new tentative agreement does not include employee-paid premiums for healthcare benefits or a two-tier wage and benefit structure, two items the union fought against successfully.
More than 1 million workers in southern India's fishing industry began a strike last week. The workers, who anchored more than 6,000 fishing vessels along the southern coast of the country, are demanding fuel subsidies and a ban on fishing by foreign firms. The fishers, represented by India's Fishing Boat Operators Association, blamed foreign companies for a substantial decline in their daily catch over the last 2 years. The association says that locals can't compete with the technology equipped on the foreign vessels, giving them an unfair advantage. India has also seen a decline in exports ever since the United States placed duties on shrimp imports. The U.S. was India's second largest shrimp buyer.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. American workers are increasingly obese. A study in the December Journal of Occupational and Environmental Medicine finds that 29% of workers in the U.S. are obese. Obesity can add the equivalent of 20 years in age in terms of increased cardiovascular risks and decreased productivity. It's a substantial 9% increase over a similar study done 10 years ago. Increases were also found in the rate of high cholesterol and diabetes. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, I've been howling in my sleep. You've been starring in my dream. Hold on.
So, what shall we cut here? How about research on breast cancer? Veterans medical care, that's on the block. Weather forecasting, park rangers, aid to rural and inner city schools. It's going to be a tough budget, no question about it, says Mr. Bush. And it's a budget that I think, he says, will send the right signal to the financial markets and those concerned about our short-term deficits. Yeah, what's that message going to be? That you're willing to run a government without a government? It's just you know, there really is very little fat left. I know everybody's all, you know, bent out of shape about all the pork, the billions of dollars of pork that were built into the last omnibus spending bill. I am too. But the reality is when you add all that stuff up, it's just a tiny fragment. I mean, it's less than a percent of the federal budget. It's really a drop in the bucket compared to what Bush is going to have to do in order to balance this budget, or even get to half-balanced budgets. Keep in mind, Clinton not only had a balanced budget, he had a surplus. Just to get to half the deficit we have right now. And the deficit, of course, every year adds to the total debt on which you have to pay interest, which makes it harder and harder to pay for anything else because you got to pay for that interest. And on it goes. Here also in the Wall Street Journal, I think this is fascinating. There was another article. This is kind of very different and yet very much the same. Figure that one out for a second. Here it is. China to tax certain metals exports. Now, what's happened is that while the United States has been under the sway of conservative economics since Reagan, and we've been moving farther and farther and farther to the right. The Chinese, who 20 years ago, 25 years ago, Reagan's time, were way, way over there. I'm reluctant to even call it to the left. They had these state-run economies. The state owned all the industries. The state owned the means of production and supply. It was communism. I mean, it's the modern incarnation of communism. They call themselves the communists, communist China. And they have been moving closer and closer toward a type of an economy where there are free market forces and the rules of the game are defined in a way that works to the benefit of the nation and the people in it. Whereas we have been moving closer and closer to the type of economy where the rules of the game work to the benefit of the players of the game, but not to the people in the nation. This is a really significant difference. You can play the game of business in a way, one drink, and then it's a totally tax deductible. What they did was they set limits on it, caps. You can deduct $25 per meal, or you can deduct a certain percentage. There were all these specific rules. You have to get a CPA on to tell you what they are nowadays. I used to know all these. I used to travel a lot for business, and you learned the guidelines within which you had to operate. But basically what it was social engineering in the business sector by government so that benefits to society would happen. That's what we did. That's what we're still doing. We're doing the same thing with home interest mortgage deductibility. It's a way of subsidizing the housing industry, and it's a way of encouraging people to own homes. We decided some time ago. This was in the last 50, 60 years. Again, I'm not sure the exact year, but I believe that this was post-World War II. Might have been pre. Certainly this didn't exist before Roosevelt came along. In any case, we decided it would be a good thing to encourage people to buy houses. Now, the banking industry was very happy about this because they make a lot of money charging interest on home mortgage loans. And the construction industry was all in favor of it. And those two industries are not insignificant. And if there's a lot of activity going on, a lot of home construction going on, it generates a lot of jobs here in the United States, 100% of them. And those jobs then pay people paychecks and cause them to go out and buy more goods and of all kinds. And boom, you know, the economy is stimulated. And so in the 1950s, 1960s, we had this explosion in housing in the United States. We're subsidizing it. The largest welfare program for the middle class that probably 95% of middle class people whose income is anywhere from, on the low end, 30 some odd thousand, it's pretty much the point at which somebody may be able to begin looking at houses in some communities, up to, say, a couple hundred thousand in that neighborhood. I believe the median income in the United States is around $50,000, $55,000. But the major welfare program for that chunk of folks is the deductibility of home mortgage interest rates. And, in fact, that's one of the major ways that a lot of people accumulate wealth, is they buy a house and they pay for it on every month, and they get to deduct those interest payments from their taxes. And the principal part you can't deduct from your taxes, but it's value. It's, you know, you're putting it into your house, and it's like putting it into a savings account. So we decided we wanted to do these things. We're not doing much of that anymore. The cons came along and said, you know, we should just, like, start tearing down these rules and these subsidies. And there has been serious discussion. John O'Neill, the Treasury Secretary before John Snow, talked about eliminating the deductibility of home mortgage deductions, interest deductions. He also wanted to eliminate income taxes on corporations. So let's have the workers pay 100% of the load of having the United States of America, and let's have the employers pay none. Right. Well, anyhow, to bring this back to China, which is where I started with this whole thing. China, quickly becoming one of the world's largest producers of metals, will impose an export tax and cancel rebates for certain products to keep more of its supply at home to feed its voracious demand, writes Peter Wanakut in today's Wall Street Journal. What China is doing is they're saying that aluminum products, copper products, nickel products, these three products, they're seeing so much of this stuff being mined in China and shipped overseas, and yet they realize that there's going to be so much demand for it down the road as they continue to grow that they're going to need it, and they don't want to end up being an importer of these things. So they're going to start an export tax. It's like a reverse duty, a reverse tariff. If you're inside China and you're mining copper and you want to sell it outside China, you have to pay a tax when you sell it to China to discourage you from doing that, to encourage you to only sell it within the country. In other words, what's going on is that China is asking the question, what is the rational thing for us to do to benefit society in terms of defining the game, the rules of the game of business? If you want to sell American products into China, many of those products, probably the majority of the products, you have to pay a tariff on. They're discouraging imports. Why? Because they want to be making their own products. We did that from 1787 up until really the last 30 years. I mean, you know, it really fell off the edge of the earth when Clinton signed NAFTA and GATT. And the last of the, not the last of the tariffs, there's still little tiny tariffs here and there on this and that and the other thing, but the textile tariff is about to vanish. So anyhow, here we see China saying, you know, we're gonna define the rule of the game, and they say that maybe is why China's big metal producers aren't shelving their export plans despite the new tax policies. See, what they're seeing is that the possibility that they can turn these into products and sell them. They can make more money.
Right.
You add value, you make more money. We used to do that here in the United States. We would mine mineral ore. We would mine iron ore and smelt it into iron and then make steel out of it. And then we would use that steel to manufacture washing machines, computers, TV sets, cars, and sell them in the United States. And every step along the way, value got added by people, and adding that value caused us to create jobs, and the jobs fueled the economy, and on it went. You know, things got better and better. Until the rules of the game changed, and the government started saying, you know, following these conservative economic policies, and saying, well, if you want people in China to add that value, that's fine. And so now we have achieved a situation where the United States exports more raw materials than we import and imports more finished goods than we export, the exact reverse of what we used to be. What we used to be is we brought into this country wood and iron ore and oil, and we shipped out of this country finished goods. And now we bring into this country finished goods, and we ship out of this country wood and coal and iron ore and soybeans. And that's what a third world country does. That's what a banana republic does. Now, am I saying we should look to China as, you know, the communist China as a model of economic sanity? No. No, of course not. Point is, I thought it was interesting, the article in today's Wall Street Journal about this. This is what most countries in the world do. They have what's called an industrial policy. They actually have policies. They say, you know, what are we going to do? How are we going to define the rules of the game so that it works best for us? And we have not been doing that, particularly during the last 4 years in the United States. The result has been the jobs have been falling off the edge of the earth. And now here's an interesting question. The jobs are going away. The source of revenue for the government is diminishing because people are making less and less. The average person is becoming more and more poor in the United States. Poverty is exploding. Where are the taxes going to come from? Particularly if Bush has his way and corporations pay less and less tax and people who earn their livings by sitting around the pool waiting for the dividend check to arrive only pay nothing. Right now they pay 15%, pay no tax. Where's the money going to come from? You don't want to raise the income tax on these people because you've said you won't do that. How about if you raise the Social Security tax? See, it's already a regressive tax. Only people making less than $87,000 a year pay income pay Social Security tax right now. People making over that, they don't pay Social Security on the tax on the money that they make over that. So let's create a phony crisis in the Social Security area. Let's use it to offload a few $100 billion or a few $1 trillion to our buddies in the financial markets who will give us money for our political campaigns. And in the meantime, let's use this crisis as an excuse to increase the Social Security tax, which is only paid by people making $87,000 or less. What a plan. Expect it. 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour. My name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir!
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers.
Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
A major power blackout sheds some light on problems with air pollution. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. In August 2003, 8 states and the province of Ontario lost electricity when power plants and electrical grids shut down. Researchers at the University of Maryland saw a unique opportunity in the midst of this blackout. It was a chance to find out how much air pollution originates at power plants. Laxin Marufu is an atmospheric chemist at the University of Maryland in College Park. He and his colleagues have been flying over Maryland for more than a decade to measure air quality. Marufu says the air is polluted by a lot of different compounds that come from a variety of sources. He says it's hard to determine how much pollution comes from each individual source, but the blackout suddenly provided an opportunity to study the effect of emissions from power plants.
By turning off power plants, while all other factors were kept fairly constant, it provided a unique opportunity to quantify directly and for the very first time the contribution of power plants to regional haze and ozone.
Just 24 hours after the blackout began, Marufu and his colleagues were in the air. They flew downwind of the blackout area and took air quality measurements. They compared their results with measurements taken before the same locations. Marufu says they got a big surprise.
What was surprising was not the fact that we saw an improvement in air quality. We expected that. But what surprised us most was the magnitude. We did not expect it to be that big.
Marufu says emissions of sulfur dioxide dropped by as much as 90% and ozone dropped by about 50%. Marufu says that rapid change is encouraging. He says it shows that effective emission controls at power plants could improve air quality along the East Coast, and they could do it quickly. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Happy holidays. 5 minutes before the hour. In the absence of any national employment policy, industrial policy, business policy, whatever, in the absence of any leadership from the government, which historically existed, corporations are going their own way. Right? They're going their own way in a way that's going to maximize profits. Many companies, this is from the Associated Press, an article by Mark Sherman, many companies are dropping their promise of health benefits for future retirees who now might have to stay on the job longer and rely on government health care in their old age. 8% of employers with at least 1,000 workers said they had eliminated subsidized retiree health benefits for some workers this year. And 11% more say they probably will do so next year. According to a study released Tuesday by the benefits consulting firm Hewitt Associates and the nonprofit Kaiser Family Foundation. It's pretty amazing when you figure that's 20%, almost 20% over 2 years. That means in 5 years, everybody's gone. No, excuse me, in 10 years, everyone. Well, it accumulates, so maybe around 7 or 8 years. You're kind of reverse compounding the interest, right? The number of companies, notes the Associated Press, that offer health coverage to retirees has been on the decline for 15 years. Since 2000, more than 100 large employers have chosen this path. There's not that many really large employers in the United States. So it's, you know, increasingly the strategy of stick it to the employee. Now, the flip side of this, this is interesting. I got this email from Laura. It doesn't say where she's from, but Laura, she says, that supreme capitalist, J. Pierpont Morgan. Remember J.P. Morgan? He's been gone for a while, but his echo lingers. He used a certain formula for evaluating whether a company was well-run. Morgan was a banker. The bank still holds his name, bears his name, the investment company. And he did an awful lot of corporate acquisitions. And how does he decide what company to buy or what company to support or what company to invest in? The top salary should be no more than 60 times the lowest salary in the company. Morgan especially used this rule of thumb when considering which companies to acquire. This from Ron Chernow's biography of J.P. Morgan. She says, funny thing, but in all the complaints against what American corporations have to do to stay competitive in the world, I don't recall them ever saying that they should use Morgan's formula or the European or Japanese formulas, which are very similar. It seemed to work better than ours. And we have a ways to go, I think. Thanks to Ira for engineering our program today, Ira Gravatt. Thanks to Louise for producing the show. Thanks to Brad Walrod for our music. Thanks to Shelby for streaming us around the planet on radiopower.org. And Ben Birch, the Archives of White Rose Society, the folks who showed up in our chat room, to our sponsors, and to you for listening. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise.